You are now joining The Mandalorian Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things The Mandalorian. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is...
Mac Lacey. Alex, we got a little bit of a catching up to do on this episode. Sorry, everybody, just a blanket apology just for kind of being a little bit absent. You know, just stuff, real life happens, we don't need to get into all that, but, you know, we're back now, and we're super pumped. This episode, we're mainly kind of focusing on the three episodes of Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, that have come out that we have not covered yet. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about those. I thought there was some really awesome stuff in there, and then maybe we'll hear from you later on.
Yeah, so that's the plan. We'll be talking about those three episodes. We'll also be talking towards the end some casting rumors and speculation, and so you know we'll give advance warning in terms
big
of
old
that
flashing road signs.
Absolutely,
spoilers ahead.
Yeah, but before we jump into our discussion, we want to break down some ways that you can help support the podcast. You can help support the podcast by following us on Twitter at TheMandoWatch and on Instagram at TheMandalorianWatch. You can also, one of the best ways to support us is leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That helps spread the word about The Mandalorian Watch to all, and it makes us feel better. And another way you can support us is through our Patreon.
And that's a win-win, because you're not only supporting us, you're, you know, getting yourself a little treat. If you like what we do here and you want more of it, we do bonus content on the Patreon. Like, we're you know, pretty soon here, we're going to be recording our Chapter 4 commentary with Jonah Marie Macias.
Yes.
And very excited for that. That's going to be so much fun. That's a big old bright spot on my my calendar.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. But and so we do all kinds of stuff. We do those commentaries. We do bonus episodes, you know, just various random topics whenever we just want to put something out. So if you want all of that, join the Patreon at, you know, it's patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. I'm sure we've got links all over our stuff too,
yeah,
and everything.
Absolutely.
Too. So yeah, just if you know, check it out. You might it's really cheap. We keep it at $1 and $2 tiers. $1 is just to kind of throw a tip our way, and then $2 right. If you want to actually buy into the extra content and everything. So we just want to, you know, keep it nice and accessible, build that community over there. It's been a good time.
And
thanks to all of our patrons who are supporting us also. You guys are awesome.
We love you.
Yeah, thank you guys. We'll be talking with you specifically here very soon. Look at, you know, keep your eyes peeled on the Patreon feed.
Absolutely. We love you very much. And so the whole idea behind the Patreon is community, but if you can't join the Patreon just yet, you still can be a part of our community by calling our voicemail hotline and leaving your thoughts, your theories about maybe what's going on in season 2, or your thoughts on the current gallery episode of The Mandalorian. So you can call our voicemail hotline, which is 205-259-6675. That's also on our Twitter right at the top. So no more news. Let's just get right into talking about these three episodes of the gallery, The Mandalorian. And I've got to start off by saying one of my favorite Star Wars podcasts is Steel Wars, and he has recently said, there can't be a worse name for a cooler show than this.
That is absolutely true. Like, this show is awesome. I am loving it. I'm loving kind of the format they're doing. You know, Star Wars is always really good about putting out awesome documentaries on the making of movies. I like watching the prequel documentaries. Like,
oh, the beginning's so, very good.
Yeah, it's so good. It's just fascinating, and yeah, and so they're doing the same thing here. It's informative. It's of course good promotion and everything for the show and for future seasons and everything like that too for them. But it's just, there's just been so many fascinating stories and, you know, talking about different ways they did things. And being, you know, I'm a filmmaker, and seeing the innovation and everything from the craft side of things for me has been really the my favorite part of this.
I'm just saying they could probably have workshopped the name a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's bad. Yeah. I got lost in my enthusiasm. All that to say, it's an amazing show, and Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, is bad. If they do a bunch more of Disney Gallery, whatever, series, you know, maybe it'll be better, but why not like the Mandalorian Roundtable or like something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's just, but like, it's just a mouthful. Disney Gallery, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That doesn't sound that much better, does
That's
it?
True. No.
Okay. So
Disney
okay.
Gallery WandaVision. Yeah.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah. That one's rough.
So let's talk about cast, technology, and practical. Starting with cast a little bit, one thing that became very obvious watching that episode is I was totally right from the get-go that Pedro Pascal really was not on set until that day that they took off his helmet.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I'm not trying to, you know, devalue anything he brought to the show. The voice is a big part. You know, he did great work on the voice acting and everything. But over and over when we were talking about the show, like when it was first coming out, every episode we'd say something about like, he's not saying much, you can't see his face, and yet you know exactly what he's feeling and what he's, you know, like what his point is. And I think that has to go to like the actual, like, you know, physical performance actors for The Mandalorian.
Right.
You know, it's Brendan Wayne and then Lateef Crowder.
Yeah. Those two guys are The Mandalorian.
They are The Mandalorian. Yeah.
Like Max said, we love Pedro Pascal and what he brings to the character, but like, I just feel like we probably need to give those two guys their due.
More props. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're the ones who are doing all the physical acting of the show. And in fact, like, there's just a recent news article that, while we're on this topic, that because Pedro Pascal wasn't really under the mask, the Golden Globes clarify rules about masked actors because of The Mandalorian. So basically, like, Pedro Pascal couldn't win an Emmy performance because he's not actually under the mask.
Yeah. Interesting. That's very interesting. So you're saying like they changed it to say that like Pedro Pascal would now not be eligible, or like, that he's now eligible?
Not eligible, basically. Okay. Because like it would need to be him.
Right.
And like I feel like that's fair.
Yeah. It's you're getting into like what actually is acting and what constitutes acting and all that kind of stuff, and I do want to be careful with that. To like, I think voice actors already have a hard enough time not being taken seriously as artists.
No, yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what they do is amazing, but like, right. In regards of like, he couldn't win a best actor for this role because he's really only doing voice acting. Yeah, that's a different category.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that's fair as far as awards go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're totally right. I think he worked... Like, I would be very interested to get a breakdown of his call sheets, like, when he was actually working.
It was cool. It was cool to see the scenes of, like, him doing the
recording
voice acting.
In the voice
because,
box,
because, like,
yeah.
He was holding, like, a pillow when it was
for Baby
Yoda.
Yoda.
Yeah.
He was, like, actually pulling guns and stuff.
Right.
Like finger guns. And...
It was really cool.
Yeah.
That was really, really cool to see that. But, it was cool to see the breakdown of, like, on set, Brendan Wayne did most of the physical acting, like pretty much all of it that wasn't like fight scenes, like physical fight scenes. Lateef Crowder did most of the physical fight yeah. scenes, or like the major stunts where he's like flying through the
flipping
air.
And yeah. So all the like almost like more traditional like body double type work he did, and then like a lot of the gunfights and, you know, kind of the physical acting Brendan Wayne did. But both of those guys are just immensely talented.
Yeah.
And I just, they both, like, the show would not exist without those two guys.
Absolutely, like, not. So props to you guys. You guys yeah. are awesome. So, like, also in that episode, really, really cool to see, you know, just how much people really, really love, like, Gina Carano.
Carano.
My brain's not working.
Yeah, Gina Carano. Man, so I love her. I loved watching her in this. I thought she was perfect for this role. She said it herself. Like, she was pretty much just being herself, like, yeah, in this role. Like, Cara Dune just kind of is her.
Right.
And, you know, with her own, you know, her personal journey and her career, you know, as a fighter, and then now she's not a fighter, but she's, you know, transitioning into acting, and there's just, like, I see a lot of parallels with her and the character, and it comes across on screen, like...
Well, I mean, it's like they basically cast her before they even asked her.
Yeah, you know, all the, like, concept art has, yeah, her face on it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's cool. I mean, yeah, and I think everybody liked working with her. I think she liked working with everybody. She's obviously going to be in season two, yeah? I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Like...
She has to be. I liked her breakdown of her character, where she was talking about, like, how she was an outcast of Alderaan, really basically before it blew up.
She's an outcast among outcasts.
Yeah, and then it was really cool to see just, like, how everyone loves Carl Weathers, and just to hear him talk, and just how he kind of almost helped guide her a little bit in the realm of acting. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he made a comparison to, like, bringing, like, some Orson Welles into the character. And we were talking about that almost, like, Shakespearean kind of bravado that Greef Karga has. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that is Orson Welles. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, but he's great. I'm very glad that I love the tradition of kind of pulling. And they even said it. He's like, he's not really acting anymore, but... they're reaching back, just like kind of the original trilogy did, reaching back to kind of previous eras and bringing their charm, you know, back into the present, making something new out of it. And, like, Carl Weathers was one of those action stars, you know, especially, like, in the 80s, and bringing him into it, like, gives the whole show kind of this this authenticity,
yeah,
like, that's added.
Right. I will say, like, just him talking, it's clear he thinks like a director more than probably an actor does. And I'm excited that he's directing an episode, or at least one episode of season two. So
yeah,
that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And kind of like we were talking about, I think on the last episode, like, he's been to Star Wars school now, you know,
right.
Like with working on season one. And they also, it was interesting. They did him kind of like Poe Dameron. Like, yes, he was supposed to go out in in chapter three. And then they were like, we're not going to do that.
We like him too much.
Right.
Well, originally too, he was going to be like an alien, and they had a lot of makeup and stuff.
Yeah. That was totally the right call not to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I loved the stories of, like, Dave Filoni talking about, even just in, like, the camera tests that they were doing at first and stuff, like, him coming in and, like, he was like, yeah, I tried directing this thing. It didn't go well at all. John tried directing it, and it went a little better, but still really not. And we're like, maybe we need to find a different approach to, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But... I mean, as cool as that episode was, the technology and practical episodes...
Much more to really sink your teeth into I think.
Like, before, like, I would say the first three episodes of this series feels almost like you're watching a Star Wars panel at Star Wars Celebration.
Mm-hmm.
But these last two episodes of technology and practical really feel like a behind-the-scenes documentary.
Yeah. I mean, we got in-depth on... both, I think the technology one may be it. I think it's been the one that has stuck in my mind the most.
I figured the latest one would.
Well, see, I loved that one. It's definitely my second favorite, I think.
Yeah.
And like, I like, I love the practical effects stuff, but we've also done that already in the new era.
That's
like
true.
When The Force Awakens came out, there was a whole thing on like the
practical effects. Real sets.
I burn for Star Wars. Like we all know that little promo and everything. But yeah, even though like The Force Awakens is also just soaked in CG too. Like,
yeah.
But the technology thing, it's truly something. And I already wanted to talk about it and made you made us dedicate a little bit of time to talking about that in a previous episode. But it is truly something that's like gonna revolutionize the industry.
And like
everything is gonna get better because of this.
When we talked about it the first time, I don't think I had a clear understanding of it, but like until I saw what they were doing, like, oh wow. Like that was amazing of like how they're basically they're allowing actors to actually see what's happening. And I thought this is where like I'm like, oh, Carl Weathers gets this from a directing standpoint, because he's like, he was basically breaking down like you could have in your mind something different when you're on a green screen set,
right,
than another actor. And so like your references are both off, and so it feels awkward. And I would say that's a lot of what happened with the prequels, is they probably were just imagining different things.
Yeah.
And then even George Lucas was imagining something different. So everyone's right. mind is kind of like off a little bit.
And there's no chemistry.
There's no chemistry.
Like, because no one's in the same scene.
Right. And so yeah. like they were talking about how when you actually see it all around you in that environment, that actually really, really helps. And so like they were kind of talking about when they're on the lava boat and stuff, like how they kind of were like almost getting seasick a little bit. Like Gina, was talking about like, I was kind of getting a little seasick with that. And like,
and then Carl was like, I was just trying not to fall in the lava.
Right. Right. So I just thought that was so cool. And it was just so incredible to see that. And like, yeah, I'm sure that would help a lot as an actor to interact with the environments in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't when I talked about it before, we did a tiny little segment on it. Like we didn't nearly have the nuts and bolts of it like we got in this. And
right.
I think it's so awesome. They're actually using like a video game engine,
mm-hmm.
To create
VR.
They're using some stuff that's actually photographed, but then they're taking that and compositing it like in a virtual environment, and that's what is making the whole. So they're able to like move that around with the camera to like create that realistic perspective and stuff.
It's pretty insane, actually.
Yeah, and it's really cool for me too, because like a big thing that ILM and George did, and it wasn't ILM yet, but that they did with the original trilogy, like the ability to do camera tracking and like motion controlled cameras and stuff. This is like the logical projection of that, because they're still using those like motion controlled cameras and everything, but now they're even able to like motion control the backgrounds in real time.
Yeah.
So you're still getting that real in camera depth, and you can, you know, treat your depth of field the same way and everything like that, but you're doing it in a room. And like from a production standpoint, they were talking about how, oh, if we need to go, like apparently Dave Filoni was doing some second unit stuff, which basically just means like this isn't the main production, but we need to get these little things for the overall production. So they just do little pickup shots and stuff like that. They're like, yeah, we could change out the background in like 30 minutes. Like you just got to move what's in the foreground.
That's crazy.
So just like efficiency, and it looks so much better than green screen backgrounds. Like
yeah.
just because you're actually creating that realism in camera.
Well, like I didn't even realize some of the shots that, you know, were not real until we were looking at it in this episode.
Yeah.
Like some of those shots in chapter 2 that I love so much were on a soundstage.
Yeah.
And I had no idea.
Yeah. And like it feels like they are in a mm-hmm. canyon. Like,
yes.
But they're not. They're in a
they're
room.
They're not. And
the
it was
volume.
Yeah, it was
I love that name for that.
The volume.
The volume. Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I just loved when George Lucas was there, and like basically he was seeing like what he was trying to accomplish realized.
Right. They were like, nobody's thought of this. He's like, I did. Yeah. This is what I've been trying to do the whole time.
Yeah. Of course, I mean.
Well, yeah.
I did.
Yeah. But I mean, like, they were talking about how, like, he's always kind of 10 years ahead of the technology.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, if they could have done the prequels like that, like, just Ooh. Imagine.
Ooh. Like, ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Just the... But, I'm sure you would get so much more emotional feeling and impact from the actors just because they're there.
Yeah.
They're there instead of a blue screen.
Right. Yeah. Wow. I don't know. It was incredibly cool to me. That like I want to work on a soundstage like that now. Like I think it'd be really fun.
It would almost be like disorienting at first too.
Yeah.
Especially when they're moving the background. Like I feel like I would get a little sick if I like don't focus on something real.
Yeah, I could see that. It'd be like watching a 3D movie without your glasses on, kind of.
Yeah.
Like just everything's like almost there, but it's just not quite right.
Like, where am I right
now? Yeah. No, I mean, I think it'd be dope, though.
You need to find your constant. That is a Lost reference. I'm rewatching Lost right now.
Of course you are. That's very on brand for you, Alex.
Yeah. And then Practical, which was so cool, like that whole breakdown of how they did Quill and how they designed Baby Yoda and Werner Herzog directing Baby Yoda puppet. Just incredible.
Yeah. I love that they relied so much on practical effects. I've said that a billion times. Like, I love practical effects. I think even if they look like in your mind, like even if consciously you know like, okay, yeah, that kind of looks like a costume they put on somebody, I think subconsciously the suspension of disbelief is so much easier when you're seeing a physical object that's been captured on screen. You know?
I mean, Quill is just so much more believable because Quill is a practical effect and a person than just being CGI.
Right. Yeah, and so the performance actor for Quill, her name is Misty Rosas, and she like, I loved her getting to kind of break down what her experience was like in that suit. Like, she can't hear, really, when she's in that.
Yeah.
So she's following, like, visual cues and things like that, and, like, her working with the puppeteers that are actually creating the facial expressions on the animatronics and that sort of thing. Like, I can't even wrap my mind around that. Like, people that do that just are on a different level of being talented.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's just incredible because, like, they have to become in sync and just, like, realize what the person's going to do next and how they're performing. Because, like, you can't talk through it. You just have to do it.
Yeah, and later on, and this they were referring to the Baby Yoda stuff when they said this, but they were like, yeah, it's like a band jamming. I'm like, oh, that makes sense to me because, like, if I'm like in a room with, you know, my band, like we play together all the time. We kind of know each other musically as well as personally. So like we can all play songs that are not written. Like we can just start playing and play a song that will make sense and we'll be able to do different things with it, you know, without talking about it. And so like that put it in perspective to me.
Yeah.
Like being, oh, okay. They know their craft individually. They know their craft as far as working on a team. And then they probably know each other to some degree. So they're just able to know, like, okay, he's probably going to do this now. So if he's doing that, I'll do this to, like, complement it. And it's just, there's so many moving parts to all those characters.
Right.
And puppeteers, man, you guys are unsung heroes, I think.
Yeah. It was just amazing. And then just, like, it was really cool to see the design breakdown of Baby Yoda, of how they came to realizing, okay, this is the right look. Because some of the looks that we saw in the episode, like, it wouldn't have worked.
The whole show would have tanked. Yeah.
Yeah, it really would have. Because it looked more like Yoda. Like, old Yoda.
Scaled down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Jon Favreau was totally right. Like, it has to do with the eyes. Like, make the eyes bigger and softer. And it looks a little weird. That's not right proportionally. But it's Baby Yoda. It's almost like a Pokemon to me.
Right.
Is the ears and the eyes.
It's the, Charizard doesn't look anything like Charmander. But, you get there.
Yeah.
You get there.
Yeah, you get there. You can see, when Baby Yoda evolves into, we're missing, middle-aged Yoda, what that looks like, but
dun, dun,
we
dun,
know where he
dun,
ends
dun,
up.
Dun, 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 dun. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, childhood memories.
Your Baby
right
Yoda
there.
Has evolved into Yoda teenager.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Oh man. Yeah. I thought the Quill stuff was awesome. But then I loved hearing this, and we had heard rumors of this, but hearing the stories from Deborah Chow talking about directing Werner Herzog, who was directing Baby Yoda, as if Baby Yoda was real.
I love that he called them cowards if they did not use the puppet more.
Yes. That's the most Werner Herzog thing ever. Cowards.
He was mad at them.
We're not recorders. We are thieves. Yeah. Yeah. He's incredible. I wish we could get a whole episode on Werner Herzog and his experience with working on The Mandalorian.
It's almost like he won't talk about anything but Baby Yoda. He loves Baby Yoda more than us. If you've listened to our podcast in season, you know how we adore Baby Yoda and we can't stop gushing about him. Well, it turns out we're in the same boat as Werner Herzog.
We are in the same boat as the man who said that at the center of the universe, at its core, was darkness and chaos.
What a guy.
He is an absolute unit.
He's something else.
He is on the next level. I love him.
We'll get him on the podcast soon.
I want to adopt him as my grandfather.
I don't.
Not like a grandfather I see often, but every once in a while.
Yeah, it's like I've got to work for him. I've got to work for his affection and his love.
I'm just I don't want him to replace anybody. I'm just saying a bonus grandparent.
You did not do good, Mac. You must do better. Yes, Werner. Grandpa Werner.
Yes, sir. These episodes were awesome. There's I could go on and on all day, but
we can't.
We can't. and y'all won't listen to that.
Yeah. What's really exciting is the next three episodes have a title, and our next episode is visualization, which I'm assuming has to do with concept art since we've already...
Yeah, production design,
kind
of pre-viz stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and then score is after that, which I'm very excited about.
Very excited for. Get to hear, I'm sure we'll hear from Ludwig and... Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, and then finally it ends with connections, and if you watched our Periscope on Twitter a couple days ago, I actually theorized that maybe, just maybe, if we're talking about connections, we'll get a little bit of a preview of season two, because there seems to be a ton of connections in season two coming.
I think they'll also talk about, and we're going to get into this in just a second.
Yeah.
But some of the rumors and things like that that we're hearing have... There's different ways to view the word connections, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, I don't think we're going to get a trailer
any
footage or anything like that. But
not
maybe
at all.
Maybe we'll get some hints, like, via maybe some concept art or just people talking about some things to expect, or, you know.
Yeah. It would just be like a line or two from Jon Favreau or Dave Filoni, and that would be
right.
it. With, right. like, an image of that one guy.
That guy. Yep.
That's as far as I would imagine. But, like, I'm assuming connections mean they're going to talk about, like, how it's connected to, like, all the things in Star Wars past, all the little Easter eggs and stuff, too, that maybe, you know, someone might not have caught, or if you haven't listened to this podcast, you didn't realize.
Yep.
Those type of things.
Yep.
So super excited.
All right. Well, I think that will wrap up our portion on the Disney Gallery. Do you want to do some voicemails now?
Yes.
And then save the stuff for the end? Yeah. So right now we'll take, we're going to hear from you guys. And again, we love, you know, when you guys call in, we love hearing from you. So if you want to leave a voicemail, you know, at any point on anything Mandalorian related, the number is 205-259-6675. So leave your questions, comments, concerns, anything like that. All right. Well, yeah, let's do one voicemail and then we will get into the rumor stuff. Sound good with you?
Sounds good.
Guys, this is Devin in California. I was just calling in to say I had a thought about the Night of a Thousand Tears. After watching Clone Wars Season 7 with my kids, it kind of hit me that maybe what Gideon is referring to is actually the clones on the Mandalorian. When they're coming down in the gunships, and wiping out all the Mandalorians. Anyways, just a thought. Love the show, and I can't wait for season 2.
Devin, thanks for your call. Night of a Thousand Tears. We, you know, if you listen to our Clone Wars breakdown, you'll know that we did not actually get to see the Night of a Thousand Tears like we had hoped that we would. Though Devin proposes that maybe we did see a little bit.
Yeah, it's a very interesting theory. Devin, thanks so much for calling in with it. And as we know, Star Wars loves to play with that whole from a certain point of view thing.
right.
And so it all depends on who you're talking to, and anything can kind of be anything until it's really explicitly stated and fleshed out, you know, like on screen. Basically, maybe Gideon's talking about the clones taking on the Mandalorians. There's the theory out there that the Armorer is a Mandalorian. I believe Jonah Marie kind of holds to that. Didn't she kind of propose that?
Maybe. I fall more in that category. Like, if we're having to categorize who she is, and the fact that she's not a Zabrak.
She is. So this is all.
Yeah.
Of course, just theorizing, speculation.
Like if we're proposing why she has horns on her helmet, it could be that she was formerly a Mandalorian, because many of them have horns on their helmet. So.
Yep. If the Armorer is previously a Mandalorian, that could make sense. That could work.
Yeah.
Because Gideon would be specifically talking about kind of this little sect of Mandalorianism that the Armorer seems to kind of be the head of. So they'd all kind of fall under that heritage. But
I just get the sense, though, that Mandalorians probably look at the Mandalorians as a scar on their history, and they probably wouldn't be proud of that.
Right.
I would assume that it would be like Corky's friends that they're talking about.
That's also what I would. I mean, like, if we're talking about what I personally think, I think we're on the same page with that. But just entertaining that theory.
Yeah.
It could work.
It could work. It could work.
Yeah.
It could work. So. I just hope that, you know, we get more answers to the Night of a Thousand Tears. And, you know, I'm betting that we probably will eventually, maybe not in season two, because it seems like season two is very busy now.
Yeah.
But
like, where in the world would they have time for that?
I don't know.
But maybe later on down the road.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
All right, so Devin, thanks again, you know, for your call and everything. Call back. Hope to hear from you again. With that, I think we are ready to move into the rumors portion of the podcast. So here is your big blinking spoiler alert sign. Just to explain, we don't know it. These are rumors. We don't. I mean, there's a lot of credibility to them.
Yeah.
We don't, but we, like, basically, I'm just saying we don't have any personal inside information from anybody or anything like that. So everything we're talking about can be subject to change, and then also everything could potentially ruin, or not ruin, but be a spoiler, you know, tip off a surprise that maybe season two would have in store for you. So if you don't want any possibility of, you know, encountering any information that might, you kind of blow a surprise for you in the second season, now would be your time to go ahead and, you know, close the episode out. We thank you so much for listening.
Hope we love you.
Yeah, we love you so much. Hope you will join the Patreon and look for us on all the medias and leave us voicemails, all that kind of stuff.
Now go on, get. We got some rumors to talk about.
Yeah. So I hope that was a big enough disclaimer. So let's just get into it.
Go on now, get.
Boba Fett, Cobb Vanth.
Okay, so
Ahsoka Tano, Katie Sackhoff, Bo-Katan.
Let's start off with Katie Sackhoff first, and then work our way to Cobb Vanth. So,
okay.
Katie Sackhoff, it reported since our last podcast that she will also be reprising her role, but in live action as Bo-Katan, which we, you know, we speculated from season one and really before season one.
Yeah.
You know, when we were doing our Clone Wars and Rebels breakdown of the Mandalorian episodes, which
we thought we might get her in season one.
Yeah. And it makes sense because we know before Moff Gideon, she's the last person we know that has the Darksaber. So either she will be present in a flashback of some kind, or she's trying to get the Darksaber back. And it just makes sense that she would be in the show. Like, she makes sense to me.
Yeah, for sure. I am personally putting money on her being in a prison. And then the Mandalorian getting thrown in prison, and then they meet there. That I've had that feeling.
You have said that ever, a lot.
I've said it multiple times. That's what I'm gonna put money on.
Interesting.
I'm shooting for the fences.
It would be really cool though if we're in this weird scenario that you've constructed for him going to prison. If he goes,
I'm saying like Moff Gideon captures him, like that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. If he goes to prison, or Boba Fett captures him, to prison, it'd be cool if they took his armor.
Yeah.
Because then we get to see Pedro Pascal in some acting.
Right.
That would
maybe
be really
doing
cool.
Some stuff. Yeah.
And like he and Bo-Katan break out. That would be super cool.
That'd be dope.
That'd be so
and
cool.
Then that also leads you to... for Bo-Katan to be a mentor to him when he's coping with having his helmet removed.
Yes.
Because that would be a shock for him if he gets captured and they forcibly remove his helmet.
And she could Bo-Katan be like, that was never counts. A rule.
It's like,
who,
yeah,
who
it's
told
fine.
You that?
You're good. Right? So, I mean, so like she can kind of counsel him back into the fold, you know?
Yeah.
That could be cool.
It could be cool. And listen, I love Katie Sackhoff. I love her performance, especially in Battlestar Galactica. If you have not seen Battlestar Galactica, Mac, which you have not, I know.
I have not.
You need to watch it because she is Bo-Katan. I mean, she's basically Bo-Katan in Battlestar Galactica too. So, she's just a fiery, passionate person who loves to fight. And that's pretty much
go.
Who Bo-Katan is. And so, I'm super excited that, you know, she's going to be in that in some way. And of course, you know, we covered this on the last episode. Huge, huge announcement that Tamara Morrison was going to be playing Boba Fett in The Mandalorian Season 2 in a small capacity. Now, a lot of people since then have been speculating that maybe he's actually Rex Ahsoka. I'm just going to tell you right now, I think I said this on the last podcast, don't get your hopes up for that one. I think that's as popular as the Clone Wars has become, to have Tamara Morrison in it as Rex, I just don't see that happening as much. It's possible. It's absolutely on the table. It would just make way more sense if he was Boba Fett. However, He could do both. That would be super confusing for people.
That's a lot.
It's already... Here's the problem. The waters are already muddy now because of the latest report that we've not been able to talk about.
Correct.
So basically, Timothy Oliphant has been cast in Season 2 of The Mandalorian, and surprise to no one, because he is in every modern-day Western now, because he was in Deadwood. He was in Justified, and I love both of those television shows, and Timothy Oliphant is a fantastic actor, and I'm so excited that he's going to be in The Mandalorian. Like, he just fits in this world. Absolutely. Here's what's interesting. The report says not only is he cast in Season 2 of The Mandalorian, but he will be wearing Boba Fett's armor, but he's not Boba Fett.
Cobb Vanth. That's it.
So can you explain to people, just in case people don't know, who is Cobb Vanth?
So kind of one of the first things that came out in the new era of kind of the new canon and everything was the Aftermath book. Which became a trilogy. And my favorite parts of the Aftermath series are actually not the main action, but the little interludes between chapters, which is just a tiny little slice of something that's happening in the galaxy right now, you know, dealing with the Empire falling. And that was where we got some really juicy stuff. And what I think will kind of be like almost springing off points for future stories. I think they'll keep kind of going back to that well, because there's so many cool ideas that are put forth in there. But one of those interludes, and there's one for each book, so that, like, in the first Aftermath book, there's an interlude about him, in the second one, there's one, and then in the third one, there's one, is Cobb Vanth. I think he's in all three.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
So basically, like, in the first Aftermath book, he buys some Mandalorian armor from Jawas on Tatooine.
Acid-pocked. It's like it's been chewed up by stomach acid. And then... basically, the Hutts, you know, when the Empire fell, the Hutts and the Empire were very closely tied. It's kind of that whole cronyism thing.
And plus, Jabba's dead.
And Jabba's dead. So, like, after Return of the Jedi, Tatooine's kind of lawless. Even, like, the Law of the Hutts, which kind of had been ruling it, like, it's gone. And so... Cobb Vanth kind of steps up and becomes this, like, there's a new sheriff in town. Like,
literally a kinda, sheriff. Yeah.
Yeah, he, like yeah. Like, and he, so it's...
He basically starts protecting those who are innocent on Tatooine. And in the last Aftermath book, he is basically the sheriff of a place called Freetown.
Yeah.
And he's fighting the Red Key Raiders, who are like this mining company that are actually just like leftover remnants of Jabba's people, basically. And
they're Zerka Corporation, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though Zerka Corporation is also a thing now, again.
They are a thing. Yes, that's true. And so, like, he's basically a sheriff who found some Mandalorian armor that's probably Boba Fett's, and he's wearing it. And so... who else could, you know, Timothy Oliphant be if that is the case? Now, Chuck Wendig, when he heard the news, basically says, I'll believe it when I see it. So, like, yeah. But here's the thing. I don't think they would have told him. Like, no, they don't have to.
And they've also cut a lot of ties with him.
They have.
There's been a big old falling out, so.
Yes. Right.
And that has been long ago enough now that, like, this would have been a development since that happened.
Here's how I'm imagining it. I would imagine that we would probably see Cobb Vanth for a very played by Timothy Olyphant for a very short scene. Honestly,
where he's wearing the armor
with no helmet on, and he's just kind of doing a sheriff type thing. And then Tamara Morrison shows up back for his armor and kills him. And that's it.
Maybe kills him.
I don't see. I mean, how
it's
survive
Boba, it's Boba Fett. So
like you're
him.
Wearing my armor.
Yeah. I think there's a world in which he's not dead and then shows up later again.
Maybe. I mean, it's very possible that he's the gunslinger at the end of chapter 5.
Nah, that's Boba Fett.
Okay, I'm just proposing that it's Cobb Vanth. He takes Fennec Shand, heals her, but locks her up. And then we see her, like, we see him, like, with his feet up on the desk, you know, leaning back in his Mandalorian armor. And then walks Boba Fett. Like, what are you doing wearing my armor? And then he kills him, takes the armor, lets Fennec Shand out. There you go.
That could happen.
I'm
still rooting for a Jango and Zam situation with Boba.
And Fennec.
And Fennec, yeah.
Yeah, me too, absolutely. It's just that is a cool parallel to have. It's poetry,
it rhymes.
it's just cool to think about, like, I don't know, or maybe, you know, the brief appearance by Boba Fett is, you know, like the tracing of the armor, almost like how we were supposed to get in The Force Awakens, like the story of the lightsaber, of how it was passed down from Empire Strikes Back all the way to The Force Awakens. Maybe we see that with the Boba Fett's armor, you know?
Yeah. The
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. It is really important to keep in mind that, like, all these, like, even though these are big name actors and stuff like that with big significance specifically to Star Wars or, you know, and characters as well, like, they could be in it, like you said, for one scene in a montage. Like, it's always important to remember that so we don't get too carried away and get our expectations too out of control, you know? I have a feeling, though, Boba Fett probably has a bigger part to play in the story.
You know, I've seen a lot of people saying, well, like, one piece of news contradicts the other, and I say not necessarily.
Yeah,
like, we don't know how the pieces fit together. Like, just because we have a piece saying that Timothy Olyphant is wearing Boba Fett's armor, to me that confirms that's Cobb Vanth. That doesn't mean he's playing Boba Fett or, you know,
exactly.
Like, or Tamara Morrison's not in it. I think it just means something that maybe we don't realize.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So
I think you're right.
Who knows? And then, you know,
but yeah,
this
I mean, season
one,
two
one last
is getting
thing that we
wild.
Never really,
like,
talked about much.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Is the fact that WWE actress Sasha Banks. Dang it.
You there?
Back, it never goes through.
I don't know.
I really didn't have much more to say. So
no, I was just doing the wrap up pretty much.
Okay.
Are you recording still? Okay, so if you're recording still and it's all one track, then we don't need to say it again. But all right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that'll pretty much do it for this episode. Again, sorry we've been away, but we got a lot of cool stuff, you know, coming back. So we should be back in force. Look for that commentary episode tomorrow for patrons. Or not look for it tomorrow, but we're doing it tomorrow.
I mean, you could look for it tomorrow, though.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Probably.
It'll be on. Those are pretty quick to put up. Yeah. Also, for the patrons, we are going to start our book club in June of Alphabet Squadron.
Yeah.
We'll be reviewing and talking about the first one, and then be ready for the second one in July. Because
yeah.
It comes out towards the end of June, I think. So, the second book.
Yeah. And this one's a little off-brand for us because it's not really super Mandalorian-y or really at all. But they're all, like, the first book is
if
incredible.
You like The Mandalorian, you'll like Alphabet Squadron.
You'll like it. Yeah, I think so.
There's they cool. They overlap in the Venn diagram there.
That's true.
So.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, yeah, look us up in all the places. Check us out on Patreon. Leave us a voicemail. All that. But more importantly, keep the watch.